Hey there, welcome to another episode. I'm Lena, and I'm joined by my friend Miles. You know that awkward feeling when a conversation suddenly dies and you're just standing there, desperately searching your brain for something, anything to say?
Oh, I know that feeling all too well. That moment of panic when the silence stretches just a bit too long and you start wondering if you should just pretend to get a phone call.
Exactly. It's like your mind goes completely blank right when you need it most. And it's such a universal fear, right? I was reading that for people with social anxiety, running out of things to say is actually one of their core fears.
That's so true. And what's fascinating is that we humans literally talk all day long. As one expert put it, if we trained as much as we talk, we'd be faster than Usain Bolt, stronger than Schwarzenegger, and smarter than Einstein.
Yet somehow we still struggle with it. So what's the disconnect there?
I think it's because meaningful conversation is actually a skill that requires practice. The good news is there are some really simple techniques that can transform how we connect with people. Did you know that having just one quality conversation a day can actually increase happiness and lower stress levels?
That's incredible. So today's episode couldn't be more practical. Let's dive into some foolproof strategies to never run out of things to say and connect with people on a much deeper level.
So let's start with something that might surprise people. The secret to never running out of things to say actually begins with talking less, not more.
Wait, that seems counterintuitive. How does talking less help you have more to say?
It's all about strategic listening. When you're genuinely focused on what the other person is saying, conversation topics literally present themselves to you. Think about it. Most people are so busy planning their next comment that they miss golden opportunities sitting right there in what's being said.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like when someone mentions they went hiking last weekend, and instead of hearing hiking, you're thinking about your own weekend story.
Exactly. But if you're really listening, that one word, hiking, opens up dozens of conversation paths. You could ask about their favorite trails, whether they're training for something, what got them into hiking, if they prefer solo hikes or group ones. The topics are endless.
That's such a shift in perspective. So it's not about having a mental database of conversation topics. It's about mining the conversation that's already happening.
Right. And here's what's really interesting. When you listen this way, people notice. There's actually research showing that people who ask more questions in conversations are rated as more likable. In one study, people who asked follow-up questions in speed dating scenarios were more likely to get second dates.
That makes so much sense. Everyone wants to feel heard and understood, but I imagine there's a skill to asking good follow-up questions.
Absolutely. The magic is in what conversation experts call threading. Instead of jumping to completely new topics, you pick up on threads from what someone just said and pull on them gently.
Can you give me an example of threading in action?
Sure. Let's say someone tells you, "I had such a stressful week at work, but at least I got to try that new Italian place downtown." Most people might respond with their own work stress story or their own restaurant experience. But threading would sound like, "Oh, wow, what made the week so stressful?" Or, "How was the Italian place? I've been curious about it."
I love that. You're giving them permission to elaborate on whatever part of their statement they want to expand on.
Exactly. And here's the beautiful thing. Once they elaborate, they've just given you even more threads to pull. If they talk about work stress, you can ask about their role, their industry, how they usually decompress. If they talk about the restaurant, you can explore their food preferences, their neighborhood, their dining habits.
It's like a conversation tree that keeps branching out naturally. But what if someone gives you really short answers, like they just say fine or good?
That's where you can use what I call the expansion technique. Instead of accepting the short answer, you gently probe with phrases like, "What made it good?" or "Tell me more about that." Sometimes people give short answers because they're not sure if you're genuinely interested.
That's so true. I think we've all been in conversations where we felt like the other person was just waiting for their turn to talk.
And that brings up another crucial point. Your body language and vocal tone matter just as much as your words. If you're asking follow-up questions but your body is turned away or you're checking your phone, people pick up on that disconnect.
Right. So the listening has to be genuine, not just a technique you're applying.
Absolutely. When you're genuinely curious about someone's experience, the questions flow naturally. You're not thinking about conversation techniques. You're just interested in understanding their perspective.
Okay, so we've talked about listening strategically, but I want to dig deeper into something. How do you move a conversation from surface-level chit-chat to something more meaningful?
This is where most people get stuck, right? They can handle the how's the weather part, but then they don't know how to transition to deeper territory.
Exactly. And I feel like there's this fear that asking deeper questions will make you seem nosy or intrusive.
That's such a common misconception. The truth is, most people are actually craving more meaningful conversations. Research shows that people consistently underestimate how much others want to engage in deeper discussions. We assume everyone wants to stick to small talk, but that's often not the case.
So what's the key to making that transition safely?
It's about what I call emotional excavation, gently digging for the feelings and experiences behind the facts. Instead of just collecting information about what someone did, you explore how they felt about it or what it meant to them.
Can you walk me through how that might work in practice?
Sure. Let's say someone mentions they recently moved to a new city. The surface level response might be asking about the logistics. When did they move? Where from? What's their new neighborhood like? But emotional excavation would sound like, how are you finding the adjustment? What's been the most surprising thing about the move?
Oh, I see the difference. You're inviting them to share their inner experience, not just the external facts.
Exactly. And here's what's beautiful about this approach. When you ask about feelings and experiences, you often uncover stories, and stories are conversation gold. They're inherently interesting, and they reveal so much about a person's values, priorities, and personality.
That makes me think about something I read recently, about how people process experiences differently. Some people focus on the practical aspects, while others are more tuned into the emotional landscape.
That's a great point. And recognizing these differences can make you a much better conversationalist. If someone is more practically minded, you might ask about the logistics and planning. If they're more emotionally oriented, you'd focus on feelings and relationships.
How do you figure out which type of person you're talking to?
Listen to how they naturally tell stories. Do they focus on the sequence of events and practical details, or do they emphasize how things felt and who was involved? Their natural storytelling style gives you clues about how to engage them.
That's so smart. You're basically matching their communication style.
Right. And this connects to something really important. The best conversations happen when people feel understood and accepted for how they naturally process the world. When you adapt your questioning style to match theirs, you're creating psychological safety.
And I imagine that safety is what allows people to open up more.
Absolutely. Think about it. When do you share your real thoughts and feelings? It's when you trust that the other person won't judge you or try to fix you or immediately redirect the conversation back to themselves.
This is making me realize how often I might have missed opportunities to deepen conversations because I was focused on being interesting rather than being interested.
That's such an important distinction. There's this pressure to be entertaining or impressive, but the most magnetic people are often those who make others feel fascinating. They're skilled at drawing out stories and insights that the person might not even realize they had.
It's like being a conversational archaeologist, carefully uncovering the interesting layers beneath the surface.
I want to shift gears a bit and talk about something that I think affects a lot of our listeners, social anxiety. For people who struggle with anxiety in social situations, even having basic conversations can feel overwhelming.
This is so important to address because social anxiety creates this vicious cycle. The more anxious you feel, the more you focus on yourself, your sweaty palms, your racing heart, whether you're saying the right thing. And that self-focus makes it even harder to connect with others.
Right. And then you start avoiding social situations, which means you get less practice, which makes the anxiety worse. It's like being afraid of driving, so you never get behind the wheel.
Exactly. But here's what's encouraging. There are specific techniques that can help break this cycle. One of the most powerful is what therapists call attention shifting. Instead of monitoring yourself, you deliberately focus your attention outward on the other person.
How does that work in practice?
It's about becoming genuinely curious about the other person's experience. When you're focused on understanding them, their thoughts, feelings, perspectives, there's less mental bandwidth available for self-criticism and worry.
That makes sense. It's hard to be simultaneously worried about how you're coming across and genuinely engaged in learning about someone else.
And this connects to something we touched on earlier, the power of asking questions. For socially anxious people, questions can be a lifeline because they shift the spotlight away from you and onto the other person.
But what if you're worried about asking the wrong question or seeming intrusive?
That's where preparation can really help. Having a mental toolkit of open-ended questions can reduce that anxiety. Questions like, "What's been the highlight of your week?" or "What are you most excited about these days?" are almost universally safe and engaging.
I love that these questions are positive and forward-looking. They invite people to share good things rather than complaints.
Exactly. And here's another technique that can help with social anxiety, what I call conversational anchoring. You identify a few topics that you're genuinely interested in and knowledgeable about. These become your safe harbors when conversations feel challenging.
Can you explain how that works?
Sure. Let's say you're passionate about cooking, hiking, and podcasts. When you feel stuck in a conversation, you can gently steer toward one of these topics by asking related questions. Have you tried any good restaurants lately? Or do you listen to any podcasts? These aren't forced transitions. They're natural bridges to topics where you feel more confident.
That's brilliant, because it gives you something to fall back on while still keeping the focus on the other person's experience.
Right. And as your confidence grows in these areas, you naturally become more comfortable exploring new conversational territory. It's like learning to swim in the shallow end before venturing into deeper water.
This makes me think about something else, the fear of judgment. A lot of social anxiety stems from worrying about what others think of us.
That's huge. But here's something that might surprise people. Research shows that we vastly overestimate how much others are paying attention to our social mistakes. Most people are so focused on their own experience that they barely notice our awkward moments.
It's like that spotlight effect, right? We feel like we're under a bright spotlight, but really, most people are dealing with their own internal experiences.
Exactly. And even when people do notice social mistakes, they're usually much more forgiving than we imagine. Think about your own reactions when someone stumbles over their words or forgets a name. You probably barely register it, or if you do, you feel empathy rather than judgment.
That's so true. I'm much more critical of my own conversational mistakes than I am of others.
And this brings up another important point. Perfection isn't the goal in conversation. Some of the most memorable and connecting moments happen when we're vulnerable about our imperfections. Sharing a mistake or admitting confusion can actually make us more relatable and likable.
I want to explore something fascinating. Why do some conversations just flow effortlessly, while others feel like pulling teeth? Is there actually science behind conversational chemistry?
There absolutely is, and it's more predictable than most people realize. Great conversations have identifiable patterns and rhythms that you can learn to recognize and create.
What are some of these patterns?
One of the most important is what researchers call turn-taking balance. In conversations that people rate as satisfying, both parties speak roughly equal amounts. When one person dominates or when there are long, awkward silences, satisfaction drops significantly.
That makes intuitive sense. But I imagine achieving that balance isn't always easy, especially if you're talking to someone who's naturally more talkative or more reserved.
That's where conversational awareness becomes crucial. If you notice you've been talking for a while, you can explicitly invite the other person in with phrases like, "But what's your take on this?" or "I'm curious about your experience with that."
And what about with quieter people? How do you draw them out without making them feel pressured?
Great question. With reserved people, it's often about creating psychological safety and giving them time to process. Instead of rapid-fire questions, you might share something about yourself first, then ask a related question and genuinely wait for their response.
So you're modeling the level of sharing you're hoping for?
Exactly. It's like saying, "Here's how vulnerable I'm willing to be. Feel free to match that level if you're comfortable." And patience is key. Some people need a few extra seconds to formulate their thoughts, especially if they're introverts or if English isn't their first language.
This is making me think about conversation rhythm. Is there an optimal pace for conversations?
There is. Research suggests that the most engaging conversations have a rhythm similar to good music. There are moments of intensity and moments of rest, building and releasing tension. Conversations that maintain the same energy level throughout tend to feel either exhausting or boring.
How do you create that natural ebb and flow?
It's about reading the room and responding to emotional cues. If someone shares something exciting, you match their energy and ask follow-up questions. If they share something more serious or personal, you slow down, lower your voice slightly, and give them space to elaborate.
That's like being an emotional DJ, reading the crowd and adjusting the energy accordingly.
I love that analogy. And just like a good DJ, you're paying attention to how people are responding and adjusting accordingly. If someone seems to light up when talking about their kids, you explore that further. If they seem uncomfortable with a topic, you gracefully transition to something else.
What about the role of shared experiences? I feel like conversations flow better when people have common ground.
Shared experiences are conversational gold. But here's what's interesting. You don't need identical experiences to create connection. Sometimes the differences are just as engaging as the similarities. The key is finding the emotional common ground beneath the surface differences.
Can you give me an example of that?
Sure. Let's say you're talking to someone who grew up in a different country. You might not share the specific cultural experiences, but you can connect over universal themes like family relationships, childhood memories, or the challenge of adapting to new environments. The emotions are often similar, even when the circumstances are different.
That's beautiful. It's about finding the human universals beneath the surface differences.
Exactly. And this is where curiosity becomes so powerful. When you approach differences with genuine curiosity rather than judgment, you often discover unexpected connections. Someone's experience of immigrating might resonate with your experience of changing schools or starting a new job. Different circumstances, similar emotions.
This makes me realize how much richer conversations become when you're looking for these deeper connections rather than just exchanging information.
Okay, I want to tackle something that gets a bad rap: small talk. People always say they hate small talk and want to skip straight to deep conversations, but I have a feeling there's more to it than that.
You're absolutely right to push back on that. Small talk gets unfairly maligned, but it actually serves a crucial social function. It's like the foundation of a building. Not the most exciting part, but absolutely essential for everything else.
How so?
Small talk is essentially a social ritual that helps people calibrate their relationship. It's how we figure out the other person's communication style, energy level, sense of humor, and boundaries before we venture into more personal territory.
So it's like a conversational warm-up?
Exactly. And it's also a safety mechanism. When someone engages in small talk with you, they're signaling that they're open to interaction, but not necessarily ready for deep personal disclosure. It's a way of testing the waters.
That makes so much sense. But why do some people seem naturally good at small talk while others struggle with it?
I think it often comes down to mindset. People who are good at small talk understand that the content isn't the point. The connection is. They're not trying to have a profound conversation about the weather. They're using the weather as a vehicle to establish rapport and gauge the other person's mood and availability.
So the weather comment isn't really about the weather at all?
Not really. It's more like saying, "I'm friendly and approachable, and I'm curious if you're in the mood to chat." The other person's response tells you a lot about their current state of mind and openness to conversation.
This is changing my whole perspective on small talk. What are some ways to make small talk more engaging?
One technique is what I call observation plus question. Instead of just making a statement, you make an observation and then ask for the other person's perspective. So instead of "nice weather today," you might say, "this sunshine is such a mood booster after all that rain. How do you feel about these sudden weather changes?"
I love that. You're still starting with something safe and universal, but you're inviting them to share their personal experience.
Right. And you're also giving them multiple ways to respond. They could talk about weather preferences, seasonal mood changes, or even transition to talking about their plans for the day. You've opened several conversational doors.
What about in professional settings? How does small talk work differently there?
Professional small talk often serves an additional function. It helps establish common ground and build trust before getting down to business. Comments about the office environment, shared experiences like commuting, or gentle questions about someone's role can help create a more collaborative atmosphere.
But there's probably an art to keeping it appropriate and not too personal.
Absolutely. In professional settings, small talk typically stays in safer territory. Work-related observations, general current events, or shared experiences within the workplace. The goal is to humanize the interaction without crossing professional boundaries.
This makes me think about cultural differences in small talk. I imagine what's considered appropriate varies quite a bit.
That's such an important point. Small talk norms vary dramatically across cultures. In some cultures, asking about family is standard small talk. In others, it's considered too personal. Some cultures value directness and minimal small talk, while others see extensive social pleasantries as essential for building trust.
How do you navigate those differences, especially in diverse environments?
The key is paying attention to cues and following the other person's lead. If someone responds to your small talk with brief, polite answers, they might prefer less social chit-chat. If they elaborate and ask questions back, they're likely comfortable with more extensive small talk.
It's like being a social anthropologist, observing and adapting to the cultural norms of each interaction.
Exactly. And remember, small talk is also your opportunity to demonstrate important social skills like active listening, appropriate humor, and emotional intelligence. These qualities matter just as much in casual conversations as they do in deeper discussions.
Let's talk about every socially anxious person's nightmare: when conversations go wrong. You know, those moments when you accidentally say something awkward, or there's a misunderstanding, or the conversation just dies completely.
These situations are so universal. And the good news is that most conversational disasters are much more recoverable than we think. In fact, how you handle these moments can actually strengthen connections rather than damage them.
Really? How does that work?
Well, think about it. When someone handles an awkward moment with grace, humor, or genuine acknowledgement, it often makes them more likable and relatable. It shows emotional intelligence and humility, which are attractive qualities.
Can you give me some specific strategies for different types of conversational mishaps?
Absolutely. Let's start with the dreaded awkward silence. When a conversation stalls, most people panic and either say something random or make the silence even more uncomfortable. But here's a better approach. Acknowledge it lightly and redirect. Something like, "Well, that's a natural pause. Tell me, what's been keeping you busy lately?"
I love that you're normalizing the pause instead of treating it like a crisis.
Exactly. And for misunderstandings, the magic phrase is often, "Let me clarify what I meant," or "I think I might have misspoken." Taking responsibility quickly and clearly usually resolves the issue and shows maturity.
What about when you realize you've been talking too much or dominating the conversation?
That's actually a great opportunity to demonstrate social awareness. You can say something like, "I realize I've been doing most of the talking. I'm curious about your thoughts on this." Or, "I got a bit carried away there. What's your take?" People usually appreciate the honesty and the invitation to participate more.
And what if you've asked a question that clearly made someone uncomfortable?
Quick pivot with acknowledgement. "I can see that's not something you want to discuss. No worries at all. How about we talk about different topic?" The key is moving on gracefully without making a big deal about it.
These all seem to have a common thread: acknowledging what happened without dwelling on it.
Exactly. The goal is to address the issue just enough to clear the air, then move forward. Dwelling on conversational mistakes usually makes them worse, not better.
What about those times when you just blank out completely and can't think of anything to say?
This is where having a few emergency questions in your back pocket can be a lifesaver. Questions like, "What's the most interesting thing that's happened to you recently?" or "What are you looking forward to?" are almost universally safe and engaging.
Those are great because they're open-ended and positive.
Right, and they shift the focus to the other person, which gives you time to regroup mentally. Plus, their answer will usually give you plenty of material for follow-up questions.
I want to talk about a specific scenario that terrifies a lot of people: when you forget someone's name mid-conversation.
Oh, this is so common. The key is addressing it quickly and honestly rather than trying to hide it. "I'm so sorry, I'm having a complete mental blank on your name," is usually met with understanding and often relief, because chances are they've forgotten your name too.
That's such a good point. We assume we're the only ones struggling with these things, but everyone has these moments.
Absolutely. And here's another recovery strategy that works in many situations: self-deprecating humor. If you stumble over your words, you might say, "Well, that came out smoother in my head." Or if you lose your train of thought, "And there goes my brain, right on schedule."
But I imagine there's a fine line between charming self-deprecation and just putting yourself down.
Great point. The key is keeping it light and brief. One quick, humorous acknowledgement can be endearing, but repeatedly apologizing or putting yourself down becomes uncomfortable for everyone.
This whole conversation is making me realize that perfectionism might actually be the enemy of good conversation.
That's such an important insight. The pressure to be perfect in conversations often creates the very problems we're trying to avoid. When we're focused on not making mistakes, we're not present and engaged, which ironically makes us more likely to stumble.
I want to dive into something that I think is one of the trickiest aspects of conversation: transitions. You know, how do you smoothly move from one topic to another without it feeling jarring or random?
This is such a crucial skill. Smooth transitions are what separate natural conversationalists from people who seem to jump randomly from topic to topic. The good news is that there are specific techniques you can learn.
What's the secret to making transitions feel natural?
The key is what I call bridge building. Instead of abruptly changing topics, you find connections between what you're currently discussing and where you want to go. It's like creating stepping stones across a river.
Can you give me an example of how that might work?
Sure. Let's say you're talking about someone's recent vacation to Italy, and you want to transition to discussing food. A jarring transition might be, "So anyway, do you like to cook?" But a smooth bridge would be, "That sounds amazing. I bet the food was incredible. Are you much of a cook yourself, or do you prefer dining out?"
I see. You're using the food aspect of their Italy trip as the bridge to the cooking topic.
Exactly. And the beautiful thing about bridge building is that almost any topic connects to almost any other topic if you look for the links. Travel connects to food, culture, language, work, relationships, hobbies. The connections are endless.
What about when you want to transition to something completely unrelated? Sometimes there really doesn't seem to be a natural bridge.
That's where you can use what I call transparent transitions. You acknowledge that you're changing topics. This is a bit of a topic change, but I'm curious about. Or, speaking of new experiences, have you ever... The acknowledgement makes the shift feel intentional rather than random.
That's so much better than just blurting out something unrelated and hoping for the best.
Right. And here's another technique, using the other person's interests as transition points. If you know someone is passionate about music, you can often transition to new topics by connecting them to musical themes. That reminds me of how musicians collaborate. Do you work much with teams in your job?
That's brilliant, because you're showing that you remember and value their interests.
Exactly. And it makes the conversation feel more personalized and thoughtful. People notice when you make these kinds of connections to things they care about.
What about timing? Is there an optimal moment to make transitions?
Great question. The best time to transition is usually after you've fully explored the current topic, not in the middle of it. You want to make sure the other person feels heard before moving on. Look for natural conclusion points, when they seem to have finished their thought or when the energy around the current topic starts to wane.
How do you recognize those natural conclusion points?
Body language and vocal cues are huge. When someone's voice drops slightly at the end of a statement, or when they lean back a bit, or when there's a natural pause, those are often signals that they've completed their thought on that topic.
And what if you misread the cues and try to transition when they're not ready?
No worries. If someone wants to continue with the current topic, they'll usually just keep talking or say something like, "Actually, there's more to that story." You can easily say, "Oh, please, continue," and let them finish their thought before transitioning.
This makes me think about conversation flow. Are there certain topics that naturally lead to others?
Absolutely. There are what I think of as hub topics, subjects that naturally connect to many other areas. Work is a great example because it connects to education, location, interests, values, lifestyle, and future plans. Travel is another hub topic because it connects to culture, food, venture, planning, budgets, and relationships.
So starting with hub topics gives you more options for where to go next.
Exactly. And it's also why some conversations feel more dynamic than others. When you're discussing rich, multifaceted topics, there are natural pathways to explore in multiple directions.
What about when conversations get stuck in one area? Like when someone only wants to talk about work or their kids?
That's where gentle redirection comes in handy. You can acknowledge their passion while creating space for other topics. It's clear you love your work. I'm also curious about what you do to unwind when you're not in the office. You're not shutting down their favorite topic, but you're opening the door to other aspects of their life.
All right, Miles, let's get practical. For our listeners who are thinking, this all sounds great, but how do I actually put this into practice? What's your step-by-step playbook for building conversational confidence?
I love that we're getting tactical here. The key is starting small and building systematically. You don't go from conversational anxiety to social butterfly overnight. It's about creating small wins that build momentum.
Where should someone start if they're really struggling with social conversations?
I'd recommend what I call the low-stakes practice approach. Start with interactions where there's no pressure for extended conversation. Cashiers, baristas, receptionists. Practice making genuine eye contact, offering a sincere compliment, or asking a simple question like, "How's your day going?"
That's smart because these interactions have natural endpoints, so there's no pressure to keep the conversation going indefinitely.
Exactly. And here's what's beautiful about this approach. You're building your comfort with basic social interaction while also brightening someone else's day. Most service workers deal with people who barely acknowledge them, so genuine friendliness is often very welcome.
What's the next level up from those brief interactions?
Once you're comfortable with short exchanges, try extending them slightly. If the barista mentions they're having a busy day, you might ask, "Is it always this hectic in the mornings?" You're practicing the art of follow-up questions in a safe environment.
And then gradually working up to longer conversations?
Right. The next step might be casual conversations with neighbors, classmates, or coworkers, people you see regularly but don't know well. These relationships have built-in conversation starters because you share contexts. How was your weekend? Or what did you think of that meeting? Are natural openers.
What about preparing for more challenging social situations, like parties or networking events?
Preparation is huge for these situations. I recommend what I call the three-question rule. Before any social event, prepare three open-ended questions that could work with almost anyone. Something like, "What brings you here tonight?" for parties, or "What's the most interesting project you're working on?" for professional events.
Having those ready must take so much pressure off in the moment.
It really does. And here's another preparation strategy. Research the event or context beforehand. If you're going to a work party, know who's likely to be there and what's been happening in the company lately. If it's a social gathering, think about what the host's interests are and what topics might come up.
What about body language and nonverbal confidence? Any specific tips there?
Absolutely. Your body language communicates before you even speak. Practice what I call open positioning. Uncrossed arms, relaxed shoulders, genuine eye contact. And here's a subtle but powerful tip. Lean in slightly when someone is talking. It signals engagement and interest.
I've heard that smiling is important, but is there such a thing as smiling too much?
Great question. The key is genuine smiles that reach your eyes, not forced grins. A genuine smile when greeting someone and when they say something amusing or interesting feels natural. Constant smiling can actually seem inauthentic or nervous.
What about handling the internal anxiety that comes up during conversations?
This is where breathing techniques can be incredibly helpful. When you feel anxiety rising, focus on slow, deep breaths. It activates your parasympathetic nervous system and helps you stay present rather than getting caught up in anxious thoughts.
Any mental strategies for staying focused on the conversation rather than your own anxiety?
Yes. Practice what I call curiosity over self-focus. When you notice your attention turning inward, worrying about how you're coming across or what to say next, deliberately shift your focus to genuine curiosity about the other person. What's their experience? What might they be feeling? What would you like to understand about their perspective?
That's such a practical way to redirect anxious energy into something productive.
And here's another confidence builder. Keep a conversation wins journal. After social interactions, write down what went well, no matter how small. Maybe you made someone laugh, or asked a question that led to an interesting story, or successfully recovered from an awkward moment.
Why is tracking the wins so important?
Because our brains naturally focus on what went wrong. Anxiety tends to magnify mistakes and minimize successes. By consciously noting your conversational successes, you're training your brain to recognize your growing competence.
What's your advice for someone who feels like they're naturally introverted and worries they'll never be good at this?
Being introverted doesn't mean being bad at conversation. Introverts often excel at the deep, meaningful conversations we've been discussing because they're naturally inclined to listen carefully and think before speaking. The key is finding conversation styles that match your energy and preferences.
So it's not about changing your personality, it's about working with your natural strengths?
Exactly. Introverts might prefer one-on-one conversations or small groups over large parties. They might excel at asking thoughtful questions and creating space for others to share. These are valuable conversational skills, not limitations to overcome.
As we start to wrap up today's episode, I want to explore something that I think is really profound: how improving your conversation skills impacts other areas of your life. It's not just about being more comfortable at parties, is it?
Not at all. Better conversation skills create ripple effects throughout your entire life. When you can connect authentically with people, it transforms your relationships, your career opportunities, your sense of confidence, and even your mental health.
Let's talk about relationships first. How do these skills change your personal connections?
When you become skilled at drawing people out and creating emotional safety in conversations, your relationships naturally deepen. Friends start sharing more vulnerable parts of themselves with you. Family members open up about things they might not have discussed before. You become the person people turn to when they need to process something important.
That sounds like such a meaningful way to live, being someone who creates space for others to be authentic.
It really is. And here's what's beautiful. When you give others permission to be real and vulnerable, they often extend the same permission to you. You end up in relationships characterized by genuine intimacy rather than surface-level pleasantries.
What about professional impact? How do conversation skills translate to career success?
The impact is enormous. Think about it. Almost every aspect of career success involves interpersonal skills. Job interviews, team collaboration, client relationships, leadership, networking, they all depend on your ability to connect with people through conversation.
And I imagine it's not just about being likable, but about being effective in those professional interactions.
Exactly. When you can ask the right questions, listen actively, and create psychological safety, you gather better information, build stronger teams, and solve problems more effectively. People want to work with colleagues who make them feel heard and understood.
This makes me think about leadership. Are conversation skills essential for effective leadership?
Absolutely. The best leaders are often those who can have authentic conversations with people at all levels of an organization.
They can ask questions that uncover problems before they become crises, have difficult conversations with empathy, and inspire others through genuine connection rather than just authority.
What about the impact on self-confidence? How does becoming a better conversationalist change how you feel about yourself?
This might be the most transformative aspect. When you stop dreading social situations and start looking forward to connecting with people, it changes your entire relationship with the world. You feel more capable, more interesting, more worthy of others' time and attention.
It's like a positive feedback loop. The better you get at connecting with people, the more confident you become, which makes you even better at connecting.
Exactly. And this confidence extends beyond social situations. When you know you can handle challenging conversations, you're more likely to speak up in meetings, advocate for yourself, or pursue opportunities that involve interpersonal risk.
I want to talk about something that might surprise people, how conversation skills can impact mental health.
This is so important. Humans are fundamentally social creatures. When we're isolated or struggling to connect with others, it takes a real toll on our psychological well-being. But when we can engage in meaningful conversations regularly, it provides emotional support, reduces feelings of loneliness, and gives us perspective on our problems.
So improving conversation skills is actually a form of mental health prevention?
In many ways, yes. Regular meaningful social connection is one of the strongest predictors of psychological well-being. When you have the skills to create these connections, you're building resilience against depression, anxiety, and other mental health challenges.
What about the impact on others? When you become a more skilled conversationalist, how does that affect the people around you?
This might be the most beautiful part. Skilled conversationalists create positive ripple effects in their communities. When you make someone feel truly heard and understood, they often carry that feeling into their other interactions. You're modeling what authentic connection looks like.
It's like emotional contagion, but in the best possible way.
Exactly. And think about the long-term impact. When you help someone feel valued and interesting through conversation, you might be giving them confidence to pursue opportunities they wouldn't have otherwise considered. Your conversation skills don't just benefit you. They contribute to other people's growth and well-being.
This is making me realize that conversation is really a form of service to others.
That's such a beautiful way to put it. When you approach conversations with genuine curiosity and care, you're offering people something precious, the experience of being truly seen and heard. In our increasingly disconnected world, that's an incredible gift.
And I imagine that mindset shift from what can I get from this conversation to what can I give probably makes the whole experience more enjoyable and less anxiety-provoking.
Absolutely. When you're focused on contributing to someone else's experience rather than performing for their approval, the pressure completely shifts. You're not trying to impress them. You're trying to understand and appreciate them. That's a much more sustainable and fulfilling approach to social interaction.
So as we wrap up, what would you say to our listeners who are feeling inspired but maybe a little overwhelmed by all these ideas?
Start small and be patient with yourself. Pick one technique that resonated with you. Maybe it's asking better follow-up questions, or practicing genuine curiosity, or simply making more eye contact. Focus on that one thing until it feels natural, then add another skill to your toolkit.
And remember that everyone is figuring this out as they go. Even the most socially confident people have awkward moments and conversational mishaps. The difference is that they've learned to recover gracefully and keep connecting.
Exactly. Conversation is a skill like any other. It improves with practice, patience, and self-compassion. Every interaction is an opportunity to get a little bit better at this fundamentally human art of connecting with one another.
Well, this has been such an enriching conversation, Miles. Thank you for sharing all these insights with us and our listeners.
Thank you, Lena. And to everyone listening, we'd love to hear about your own conversation experiences. What techniques have worked for you? What challenges are you still working through? Your stories and insights make these discussions even richer.
Absolutely. Keep practicing, keep connecting. And remember, every conversation is a chance to learn something new about another human being. Until next time, keep those conversations flowing.